Hey, you awesome folks. Thanks for taking this journey of discovery with your guide, Keith Haney. You're listening to the Becoming Bridge Builders podcast, your favorite podcast for everything from racial reconciliation to education innovation, justice reform, and leading change in the 21st century. This podcast is for people who love to be challenged with difficult topics, but want practical solutions to solve these challenging issues. Becoming Bridge Builders makes change possible. Each week on the podcast, Keith invites innovative thought leaders to share how they are building bridges in their area of expertise. You will hear breakthrough ideas and concepts that are changing the world. He's featuring guests who are best-selling authors, leaders at Microsoft, entrepreneurs, leading educators, professors, lawyers, and so many more. Listen in to learn how you can be the bridge to the change you are seeking.
My guest today is Frank Ramos. Frank is a managing partner of the Miami Litigation Boutique firm of Clark Silvergate, Pennsylvania, where he practiced in areas of personal injury defense, product liability, employment, and commercial litigation. Frank served on the Board of Defense Research Institute as a member of the Federal Defense and Corporate Council, where he serves on the Board of Directors and has served as co-chair for the Disposition Bootcamp, the Art of Marketing Seminar, and the ACT Initiative. He is a past president of the Florida Defense Lawyers Association and past chair of the 11th Circuit Judicial Circuit Historical Society. He served on boards of the Miami-Dade County Defense Bar Association, the FIU Honors Alumni Association, the FIU Alumni Association, Parents of Miami, Miami Legal Services, and the Florida Christian School. Frank has written 19 books for lawyers and business professionals. We welcome Frank to the show. Well, Frank, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have this conversation with you.
I appreciate it. Love being here with you.
So I'm going to give you an easy question, or some say it's not an easy question, but I like their questions. But give us the best advice you've ever received.
You know, the best advice is that no matter how big your dream is, it's worth pursuing. And just because someone hasn't done it or hasn't done it well, it shouldn't stop you from pursuing it.
I like that. And who told you that? Or where'd you get it from?
You know, I've had several people tell me that. I've heard a number of motivational speakers and folks at church mention that to me. And, you know, there's man-sized dreams and God-sized dreams. And it's always worth to sort of reach beyond your grasp.
That's neat. I like that. I may have to borrow that. And then I'll say, for the first time, I got this from Frank. And then about the third time, it's like, as Keith always says.
That's right.
So tell us something about yourself that most people don't know, for the millions listening at home and for the people listening in Norway, which this podcast is trending in.
You know, I do a lot of writing, and I've been trying to write a novel on and off for many years. I've had different attempts, and I'm trying again. And I've written most of my writing is nonfiction, primarily for professionals, business-related books, self-published or published through voluntary bar associations. I'm a lawyer here in Miami. But I've always wanted to write fiction, and so on and off, I'll make attempts at it. I'm trying again. Let's see what happens this time.
You know, I've tried that too, and my biggest struggle has been developing the characters.
That's true, yeah. That is very true.
I love the idea of fiction.
Right, and you would think it would be easier to write because there's no form, or, you know, you're just kind of making it all up versus having to research something. But it's actually harder. At least it's harder for me, so I haven't quite, you know, accomplished what I've been seeking. But hopefully, yeah. I'll get the ball rolling a little bit more in the coming weeks and months ahead.
Well, now you have to, since you broke that news here on the podcast. People will be expecting
that's right,
Frank Ramos fiction novel.
That's right. Now I'm committed.
And now you're committed, or you should be.
I'm like the that breakfast analogy regarding eggs and bacon. The you know, chickens are trying, but the pigs are committed. That's me now.
There you go. So I'm always kind of curious, for people, especially like yourself, who were some major influences in your life?
You know, I spent a lot of time growing up reading a lot of books that you sort of put in the self-help or motivational category. I'm 50 and I grew up in the 70s and 80s and read books like, you know, by Zig Ziglar and Tony Robbins was just coming up around that time. And, you know, there are, you know, and the old books, you know, How to Make Friends and Influence People by Carnegie. And so I read a lot of books in that space and borrowed a lot of advice from those people. And so these are people I never met, you know, I never heard them live or spoke with them, but I read their offerings. And a lot of the advice is very similar. You know, I've written and I've read tons of books on self-help and motivation and inspiration. And really it all comes down to discipline over time. You know, it's people can motivate you, but it only lasts so long. And at the end of the day, you have to have a dream. You have to have a goal. You have to write down that goal, have a plan to achieve it. And you have to work it. I mean, you have to work the goal each and every day and pursue it each and every day. And I think a lot, that's where most people just kind of fall short. I think a lot of people stick their plans in the wrong file and just never look at it again. And looking at all those folks who write and speak in that area, you know, a lot of them talk about strategic planning. I don't know if they use that phrase, but they really talk about, you know, having a plan and executing and working the plan. And so if looking at mentors, you know, again, these aren't people I actually even know, but, you know, a lot of the folks in that space have been writing that space for decades now, have been very influential in terms of how I see and pursue my life goals.
I like that. That's interesting. You know, I work a lot with organizations, especially churches, and I'll ask them sometimes, you know, what's your mission statement? And the mission statement is something right. they did years ago and they put in a file box and it's in the closet and they don't use it. I'm like, well, if you don't actually use the mission statement, it is really your mission. So you're right. It's execution.
Right. That's fair. Yes. Yeah. It's I help organizations and law firms and trade associations with strategic planning. And I'm surprised how some organizations don't even have a mission statement. And others haven't looked at it in quite some time. And if you don't know your why or what you're about, then you're just kind of going through the motions. And you may somehow intuitively or inherently know what your why is, but it's good to actually have written it down and thought through it and, you know, revamped it from time to time.
That's great. So I loved having you on because I did some research on you in preparation for our talk together. And I noticed that one of the things that seems to be a theme of your blog that I saw, your website was, you love to mentor people, especially you mentor a lot of lawyers, especially young lawyers. So what are some of the challenges that young lawyers or young professionals are dealing with today?
I think the biggest thing young professionals across whatever sector they're in is that they're not really sure what their long-term plan is. You know, many of them sort of fall into a career or a profession or a job. Some think they know why they're doing it, but many don't. And a lot of them have sort of an idealized version of whatever profession they're pursuing and quickly realize that's not how it is at all. And it's a bit discouraging. And so what I try to do is I help young individuals try to define for themselves their purpose. And the way I define a purpose is where your talents and your dreams and your passions intersect. If you're sort of draw a Venn diagram and just write down all your talents and then write down all your dreams and then write down all your passions and you sort of saw where they intersected. And that's generally where your purpose is. You know, I think we all have these talents that we're imbued with. We all have these dreams that are constantly coming into our consciousness and we all have things we're very passionate about. And I think there's generally almost always ability to use that in your career. You know, that should really sort of define what you do. And if not, at least define how you do it. And so I try to help young people make that realization. And I think people are much happier and much more joyful and have a much better sense of self and generally can combat things like depression and anxiety a little bit better if they're doing and are at the place where they're supposed to be. And having, you know, lived 5 decades in this earth now, I have a sense of, you know, I made my share of mistakes and did a lot of dumb things and realize that, you know, we all lose out and miss out a lot of times by just playing it safe and not doing doing things for other people or doing things for material goods or doing things because we think what we're supposed to be doing versus really pursuing our own interests and kind of have this perception of you that people are constantly watching us and kind of judging us. And quite frankly, most people don't have the time or the energy to do that. We just need to live our lives. And, you know, anybody who actually has the time to worry about what I'm doing is not, you know, someone I should be worrying about.
So you're a lawyer in the Miami area, and I know it's a very diverse area in Miami. And I'm assuming you guys also dealt with some of the tensions that were happening too, and you're probably struggling with some of the changes to justice in the area. So as a lawyer, I'm always curious, what are some of the challenges you've faced as a lawyer with all the social justice change and discussion lately, especially post George Floyd? How has that impacted what you do or people you work with do?
That's a great question. I think what happened after the George Floyd incident, which is tragic, there was finally a real conversation that had been taking place that people in corporate America and in law firms just weren't having. And they had it for a while. I think we're kind of, unfortunately, sort of sliding back into not having it anymore. But I hope that it opened certain doors and the dam sort of burst open. And now conversations that people thought weren't good to have in polite company are suddenly important conversations we're all having. And I think what that generated was a lot of people now felt okay to have those conversations. You know, often conversations are being had by, you know, certainly in the legal field by diverse lawyers with other diverse lawyers, but not with sort of the general population, not with clients, not putting themselves out there in social media. A lot of firms had these policies where, you know, they really kind of cracked down for that about, you know, what opinions you can express in social media so as not to upset certain clients, especially large corporate clients. And I think that kind of changed. And so you had a lot more people expressing their views to the general population and firms either agreeing with it or at least not opposing it. You know, I'm not sure if some of them still like that we're doing that or not, but the discussions are being had. They're being had more frequently. They're being had over longer periods of time. And I think there's a greater understanding. I think each of us have our own stories to tell. And I think for the most part, what happened there is that, you know, a lot of, you know, again, I'm talking from the perspective of a lawyer. I think a lot of Anglo lawyers were starting to understand that the experiences and life and background of a lot of diverse lawyers who are African-American or Hispanic or even Asian was very different than theirs. And, you know, they had different life experiences. You know, for them, the police wasn't somebody who made them feel safe. They often were, you know, pigeonholed or typecast, or, you know, if they succeeded, a lot of Anglos thought it was sort of affirmative action to play and they weren't giving them the credit. And so all that was sort of under the surface, and that all kind of came bubbling up, and it had to be addressed. Now, has it been fully addressed? No. Are we regressing a bit again? Are we sort of falling back to old patterns? Sure. But I think that was such a stark and tragic incident that it really pushed things to the surface that needed to be addressed.
Yeah, I've had a chance to actually interview some police about the George Floyd thing, and you're the first lawyer I've talked to post that issue. And I'm kind of wondering, as we try to move forward as a nation and society, how do we do that? And I like what you had to say about, you know, people are starting to at least have the conversation. And I do wonder how we begin to keep that conversation going.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now a word from one of our sponsors, For Freedom Mobile. If you're using AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, then you're being tracked. Mobile providers collect your location, communications, internet activity, even your financial transaction. They sell that data to anyone willing to pay for it and provide it to the government without a warrant. Switch to For Freedom Mobile, and you won't ever have to worry about big tech or Big Brother tracking you through your mobile phone again. For Freedom Mobile provides secure, unlimited talk, text, and high-speed data for just $29.99 a month, and it includes free internet roaming in over 200 countries. Sign up for the service by visiting forfreedommobile.com and using the promo code BRIDGEBUILDERS to get your first month for only $9.99. See forfreedommobile.com for details. Just like the number 4, freedommobile.com.
You know, it's when that came up, there were a couple of shows that I watched, and I know this is kind of a weird segue. There were two shows. There was Watchmen that was appeared on HBO. And for those people who aren't familiar, the Watchmen series was sort of a take off of the Watchmen graphic novel that was released in the mid-80s by a author by the name of Alan Moore. And they turned a graphic novel where it kind of redefined how we view superheroes to one that was very much based on race. And did really a superb job. And if anybody has HBO or can have access to it and watch the Watchmen series, think about 10 or 12 episodes. It's a brilliant series. And that series brought to the forefront a lot about the Tulsa Massacre that no one really, like a lot of people in Anglo community weren't even aware of. And it started an interesting conversation. And I think that actually was released, I forget whether that was released before or at the same time the George Floyd incident happened. And then there was also another series, also on HBO, called Lovecraft Country, which was very much about race. And it was sort of a science fiction horror series, but again, very much born given race. And it talked about sunset cities and a lot of these issues that, again, most Anglos, especially younger ones, had no idea even existed. It was, you know, we've kind of whitewashed all that. Now we've kind of put that behind us. And it took two fictional TV series to kind of put this back into the public conversation, along with obviously all the issues with George Floyd and a number of other individuals that were attacked physically by the police for the last few years. So it's funny how sometimes pop culture, very intentionally brings things to our attention and it starts conversations. And, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with education, the 1619 Project, a lot of these other things. It's important to understand that our country is great in many respects, but not so great in others. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think as individuals, we're all imperfect. There's, you know, certainly the concept of depravity of man. And to sort of point out the bad doesn't mean that we're purposely ignoring the good and vice versa. And I think these conversations are important to have. I think it's, it's this idea that there was some better time in the past is a bit of a myth. I remember one time, this is years ago, I was in Sunday school, and we were having some conversation. I don't even know how this came up. And it was a largely Anglo group, mostly elderly men and women. And someone mentioned, you know, they wanted to go back to the good old times. And I wasn't really sure what that meant. And I said, well, you know, what are we talking about? It's like, well, you know, the 1950s. Like, all right, it's the 1950s. All right, well, let's think about the 1950s. In Mississippi, you're like, okay, like, and you're black. And suddenly, do you really want to go back there? And so there's this lack of understanding. You know, it's, I think everybody, I guess most everybody wants to have a certain sense of safety and the definition of who they are and what they want to be, but it ignores all this history. And I think a lot of the tension comes up with the fact that people aren't even having the conversation. I think if people were to say, yeah, we had this period in time where it's a very tragic period, everything from slavery to Jim Crow to segregation to separate but equal. And, you know, and that really wasn't that long ago. And even till today, we have people who are racially profiled and microaggressions and still not as serious or significant, but, you know, it's just still pretty important and affects lives very seriously. And you have all these dog whistles all over the place. And Joe, you know, and it didn't even happen that long ago. You know, you have Charlottesville, you have all these other incidents, and it's just like, wow, it's always like right there under the surface and nobody wants to talk about it. And the idea that all we do is talk about it isn't true because no one wants to really listen sometimes. So I should get off my soapbox. But I think what's happened is that more people are having that conversation. You know, you're and there's some symbolic things like remove Civil War statutes and, you know, trying to teach this. But then you have, you know, the people fighting back and saying, you know, critical race theory shouldn't be taught. And it's not even being taught. It's a weird conversation and it's very volatile. And it feels sometimes we're like in a bit of a tinderbox. But to ignore it is and to just kind of brush it under the carpet really isn't a good way of doing it either.
Yeah, a couple of things you said I want to kind of touch on it because I've had this talk with people too. It's like, you know, the good old days for you may not be the good old days for somebody else. So how do you remember and acknowledge that? And I like what you said too, that you can look at America's greatness and also deal with the fact that America has flaws. And those both of those things can be true at the same time. And they have to be, because it's true of us. We have some wonderful qualities as human beings. We have some areas we need to work on as human beings. To think our nation is any less than we are would be kind of naive.
People, you know, it's sort of like this reptilian brain thing we have, where if we can just scare somebody, we'll get them to do something. And unfortunately, that's sort of controlled our public conversation too much, as opposed to trying to find ways where we can find common ground. And while we address our differences and appreciate, you know, the shortcomings, we also find ways of working together on things.
And you also mentioned critical race theory. And it's funny, because I've had this talk with a lot of people about critical race theory. And my thought is, yes, it started in the school of law, and it's trying to figure out a way to deal with inequities. But don't get caught up so much in the language of critical race theory. But look at what critical race theory is identifying as possible problems and areas to improve. I tell the church, be careful not to adapt critical race theory's prophets, its theology, and its, you know, disciples. But maybe out of that, there are some things that identifies that really do need to be addressed. Like you talk about, somebody talked about redlining. There are situations where there was redlining. Right. And maybe something like critical race theory might identify those areas where housing was a problem. So how do you deal with the issues that it presents versus accepting all things that it, you know, it kind of supports behind it?
Right, right. And yeah, I mean, historically, we lived in a racist country. I mean, there's really no other way of saying that. And I think that kind of gets certain people's backs up. But it's true. And there's really, you know, you come up with 101 examples on how that works. And you don't have to go any further than how we, you know, fund schools and how it's based on property tax. And, you know, property issues have generally been, as you mentioned, redlined. And so you have lower property taxes and lower income areas, which create worse schooling, which provide fewer opportunities. And you just, you know, just spin it out. It's kind of obvious. You know, schooling and how important integration has been, and how important things like school busing. Like, people have studied this ad nauseum, and they found out that for diverse students, the best thing ever happened to them was busing, which a lot of people hate. This idea that you're moving people from one school to another, and you're forcing them to go to a school that, you know, that they're not part of, or you know, they don't belong to. But studies are clear. I mean, it's just people do better in better schools, and African-American Hispanic students that were placed in predominantly white schools ultimately did better. And, you know, and just it's how it is. You know, it should be any surprise. I mean, I don't know why anybody would find this shocking. If you have a school that has more resources, their students are going to do better. They're going to have more opportunities, or go to better colleges, or get better careers. And, you know, it's going to perpetuate from one generation to the next. And so we're still trying to deal with the sins of our fathers, and people just want to move on. And there has to be a balance, obviously. You know, I'm not proposing reparations per se, but there has to be a balance in terms of how we address these issues. And there should be some middle ground that most reasonable people should be able to agree on. And I'm hoping we're moving in the right direction. I hope we're at least having the right conversations. I guess time will tell.
Hey, I think the hard part, what you just said, was probably the biggest issue, is that we have to deal with the fact that our country has a dark past. And how do we deal with that? And still, because people like the term racist, and I understand that that term seems inflammatory. But there are things that happened in our past that we have never addressed. So how do we deal with that? People just want to, let me just move on. I don't want to talk about those things. That wasn't me. That was my ancestors. But the issues are still impacting those communities. So how do you deal with the issues that are still impacting those communities?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. And I don't think those issues are still too far in the rear view. There was a U.S. senator, I forget who it was, who suggested somehow the Loving decision, which ended separation of races from marriages, was somehow wrongly decided. That was a state issue, which is really kind of scary. And so, and of course, he would say in his defense, he was just, you know, kind of taking things to their legal conclusion, and that under our current circumstances, no state would allow that. I'm not quite sure about his position on that. And so there's these race-baiting issues that constantly come to the forefront, and you have all these provocateurs who have their dog whistles and say certain things and then kind of back off once they're confronted by it. But, you know, there's a following for that, which is a little scary. You know, there are people in their chat rooms and on their social media platforms that, freely use racial epithets and have some view that the South should rise again. And they're there, and they're there, and they're out there. And so that's a little challenging and surprising. And their politicians are happy to feed into that anger and really racism, for another word, to get those votes. So, it's really challenging. And things have gotten better in certain respects, and things have not in others. And I don't really have any answers. I can't really tell you what we should be doing other than talking more and having more groups, whether they're on Zoom or town halls, whatever it is, and getting people together and having like real conversation. But the thing is, it's become so polarized that it's really hard to have a conversation, especially if everybody is watching or seeing or reading the same type of media. I think there was probably a time where, we all got our news and evening news. And this was many years ago, before everything was so polarized with all the news. The news was just news. News would just literally just tell you what was happening. You didn't have all these talking heads everywhere. And now everybody has an opinion, and everybody either slants left to right, and everybody sort of, plays along with whoever they agree with. And so you get two people who have a conversation, and they can't even agree in the same terminology or, how they want to discuss things, because they're, just the way they speak and the topics they address and what they consider newsworthy is polar opposite.
Yeah, I started this podcast with the idea of having opposing voices on and have a conversation, because we don't get that very often. And it's been interesting, because I think I've learned a lot, and I hope my guests have learned a lot from us having a conversation. And I get pretty positive feedback from the audience going, I like the fact that it's a safe forum to have difficult conversations.
Right, right.
So I try to model that used to be the news, but it's not anymore.
No, it's not at all. Yeah, things have really changed in terms of just having a conversation. Like, when I talk to somebody who has a different view than me, I have to first figure out where they're coming from and where they're getting their news source and what their talking points are, and try to get past that. And that's true from wherever they are on the spectrum, because we just don't really appreciate independent thought anymore. It's really unusual.
Well, my phone is kind of funny. I usually have both sides of the news spectrum on my phone. So in the morning, my phone is just confused. Do I send him this algorithm or this algorithm of news? And so I'll get sometimes the same story from two totally different points of view. And somewhere the truth is in the middle. And so it's kind of fun to not right. have only one echo chamber you're listening to in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
But my phone doesn't really like that. So it's really fascinating. But Frank, what are you working on that you're excited about?
I really, other than my work that I do, I work largely on civil matters for personal injury products and liability work and some commercial work. I really enjoy, again, doing a lot of the mentoring. I have a website called MiamiMentor.com, which is the one you referenced earlier, where I keep my books and have some training videos. And my sort of tagline is "My purpose is your purpose," where I help people try to define pursue their life's purpose. And I really enjoy it. I speak with a lot of young professionals, primarily lawyers, either over coffee or, I'll get together with them virtually, or I'll talk to them over the phone. And, most days I'll speak to one or two young lawyers for a few minutes, and try to help them figure things out. Not that I have all the answers. I think most people know what they want to do. They just need someone to talk it through with them. And so I kind of provide a place where they can kind of be a sounding board and have them think through what they want to accomplish. And so that's what I really enjoy doing. And I've been speaking a lot lately. And we're finally, I think, hopefully at the tail end of the COVID period. It's been over 2 years now. And I think a lot of us are now going back to live events. And so a lot of my speaking is moving from virtual platforms with Zoom or Teams to something more in person. I'm going to be, I think, traveling a couple of times in the next couple of weeks to speak on a few issues. And I really just enjoy just getting out there and talking to people, and really very curious by nature and learning what motivates people and what gets them up and how they do things and how they accomplish things. And I learn as much from them as I hope they learn from me. So that's what really kind of gets me going every day.
That's great. So when the final gavel comes down on your life, what do you want your legacy to be?
You know, I hope, despite whatever mistakes I made and any shortcomings I had, I hope people think that I was able to actually add some value to their lives. And I don't even know how to really define that. But and I kind of want to leave it all on the field. You know, I don't really want to create a legacy where I just had a lot of stuff. I tried to give away my time, try to give away my resources. Denzel Washington often says that you never see, or you'll never see, a hearse followed by a U-Haul. You know, it's like you just can't take it with you. And so so to try to accumulate a lot of things, accumulate, whether it's money or items or goods or houses or cars, I don't know if that's particularly valuable. You know, it's kind of vanity. So I try to give back as much as possible. I try to help as much as possible. I think it's quite selfish, because it really feels pretty good to actually, you know, help other people. It's very life affirming for people, you know, for your listeners who suffer from depression or anxiety. Depression is very insular. You know, I suffered from it for years. And once you get outside of yourself and you find ways to help others and not focus on yourself and focus on others' needs, you actually do much better for yourself. And so there's a certain selfishness and the selflessness.
That's great. Anything I haven't asked you that you want to cover?
No, I think we covered it all. It's been quite a wide range discussion. And I think, now that we're moving beyond the pandemic, I think we all have to appreciate that we've developed and established certain habits. You know, habits usually take about a month to create, and we've been in this role for about 2 years. So we've all become more accustomed to doing things remotely. You know, working from home has become more common. Communicating on our phones has become more common. Social media has become more common, because we weren't actually seeing each other. So we're spending more time on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and Twitter and all these other things. And we're never going to go back to the way things were completely. You know, we're going to start socializing more. We're going to spend more time with each other. But we've just been in this world way too long, you know, and we're creatures of habit. And we're just going to have to learn how to communicate better. I think we've all learned to communicate more electronically, more briefly, which also can create certain problems in communication and differences and misunderstandings. And we'll have to kind of work through that. But I think more and more of us are communicating through text messages and instant messages and just pop-ups that come up on a screen and watching 30-second TikTok videos than we were, you know, 2 years ago. And especially with, you know, younger generations. And so it's important to understand and really take some time to appreciate how we're communicating, how that's changed, what the effects of those changes are, what they will continue to be, and learn from that.
That's great. So tell people where I can find you on social media again, and your website one more time.
My website is miamimentor.com, and I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I have about 62,000 followers there, and I post daily. Generally general advice for lawyers, but I would hope that some of the advice transcends and goes to other professionals as well. Well, I've been posting there daily for about 6 years now. And for anybody who's out there who wants to have a voice in the platform, you know, find one that speaks to you. It could be LinkedIn, it could be Facebook, it could be Instagram, it could be TikTok, you know, whatever you think it is. Think about your audiences, the different, each of these forums have different types of audiences, and then just stick with it, you know, stick with it for a while, and you're going to find that you're going to develop a community, you're going to develop a tribe, and you develop a following and a brand and a way of sharing your thoughts and your values with others, and it'll really pay off dividends in the long term.
Well, Frank, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks so much for being on here, and look forward to having more conversation with you.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Becoming Bridge Builder. If you enjoyed this episode and want to help support the podcast, please subscribe and share it with others. Post about it on social media or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at @bkeithhaney and on Getter and Twitter at @revheadpin or on his website at alightbreakthrough.org. Thanks again, and tune in next time.